I'm going to address myself to a question this morning, but before I do, I want to tell you why I feel a little bad about asking this question in the first place. The reason I feel bad is because my father was and is a rabbi. And so when I was a kid, I was the rabbi's son. Now, I shared this burden, it's true, with my three brothers, but each of us felt it. We felt it at different times, but I want to tell you particularly when we felt it, when we were running through the halls of the synagogue. Because, of course, that's what kids are supposed to do in order to avoid the adults who are trying to stop them. If you walk, they'll catch you. And sooner or later, someone would stop me and they would look at me, their eyes filled with concern, and say, "David, how could you run through the synagogue? After all, you're the rabbi's son." In the meantime, while they were talking to me, out of the corner of my eye, I saw the doctor's son whizzing by and the lawyer's daughter jumping all over the place, but I was the rabbi's son. So I have a certain sensitivity to asking why the children of prominent people don't succeed. And I feel uncomfortable because this morning I'm going to talk about a theory as to why Moses' children didn't succeed. But before I get to the theory, let me just say I have a lot of sympathy for them because they were Moses' kids. And I'm sure that as they ran through the desert, somebody pulled them aside and said, "How could you run? After all, you can fill in the rest." Nonetheless, it is true, not only that you expect, whether it's right or wrong, you expect something from the children of certain people, however unfairly, but also in the ancient world particularly, leadership was largely hereditary. The children of kings were expected to be kings. The children of priests were expected to be priests. And it is surprising that Gershom and Eliezer, the children of Moshe, are virtually invisible in the Torah. It isn't just that they don't take over from Moses. So we hear almost nothing about them. And we don't even know why. It's not as though the Torah tells us, look, Gershom and Eliezer lived a nice, quiet life, but they really weren't the stuff of leadership. We just don't know. But I ran across an eloquent and interesting theory about why these two individuals did not distinguish themselves from a professor at Bar-Ilan University, Professor Zeiderman is his name, Adrian Zeiderman, who actually is a professor of economics, but in that blessed place, even professors of economics have brilliant theories about Torah. And I wanted to share it with you this morning because it says something essential about how we raise our own children. At the beginning of this morning's reading, it says that Yitro brought back, Yitro being Moses' father-in-law, brought back Tzipora, Moses' wife, and Gershom and Eliezer, Moses' children, after he heard about what happened with Israel. So the rabbi said, well, what did he hear? And their theories are, he heard about the Exodus, he heard about the splitting of the Red Sea, he heard about the battle with Amalek. And one rabbi, Rabbi Eliezer HaModai, said, no, what he heard about was the giving of the Torah. Now this, despite the fact that in the Torah itself, the giving of the Torah seems to happen later, but the chronological problems I'm not going to get into at the moment. Some Meforshim, some commentators on the Torah, say, yes, it was all about the splitting of the Red Sea. Others, most prominently Ibn Ezra, say, yes, what Yitro heard about was that God gave Israel the Torah, and once he heard that, he brought back Moses' wife and children, and then they traveled through the desert. Which means that Moses' children missed the giving of the Torah. They were in Midian. They weren't at Sinai. And so you have to ask yourself, why wasn't Moses with his kids? I mean, this was not only the highlight of his life, but the highlight of human history, and he leaves his children in Midian with his wife. And the answer that Professor Zeideman gives is, I think, an insightful one and a plausible one, which is Moses didn't want his children to be with him because he was afraid to bring them to Egypt. He knew what was going on in Egypt. And the Midrash, in fact, the rabbis talk about Aaron and Yitro suggesting to Moses that he not bring his children to Egypt. Because for all of the plagues and all of the promise of liberation, who would willingly take their children into a situation of slavery? But because Moses didn't bring his children to Egypt, they didn't see the liberation, and they didn't receive the Torah. And so, you see, the message is that in his attempt to spare his children pain, Moses cheated them out of glory. Now, how does this apply to us? A few years ago, there was an article published in Psychology Today. It was called A Nation of Wimps. It starts off as follows. Maybe it's the cyclist in the park, trim under his metallic blue helmet, cruising along the dirt path at 3 miles an hour on his tricycle. Or maybe it's today's playground, the all-rubber cushioned surface where kids used to skin their knees. And wait a minute, those aren't little kids playing. Their mommies and daddies are there with them co-playing or play-by-play coaching. They take it half easy on the benches, as parents used to do, letting few of them take it half easy on the benches, letting kids figure it out for themselves. Then there are the sanitizing gels, which over a third of the parents now send with their kids to school, according to a recent survey. Presumably, parents worry that school bathrooms aren't good enough for their children. Behold, the wholly sanitized childhood, without skin knees or an occasional C in history. Kids need to feel badly sometimes, says child psychologist David Elkind. We learn through experience, and through bad experiences, through failure, we learn to cope. I know from my own experience, and from the experience of others with whom I speak, that this isn't only something that afflicts our children. But I'll tell you where it is clear to me. It was clear to me especially when I began to teach at colleges and universities. And a student invariably, every semester, would come into my office shaking and in tears, or wanting to cry, because the heavens had fallen through and they had received a B+, or God forbid, a B-. And they literally did not know what to do with it. And this article goes on to say that the mental health services each year report an increase at colleges because children who were raised in a fully sanitized environment have no tools for coping with failure. They don't know what to do when something goes wrong, because when they were in high school and they got that B-, their parent marched into that teacher's office and said, how dare you give my child a B-, or God forbid, a C. Thereby, not teaching the teacher anything, but teaching the child something, which is, you must never fail. Failure is unacceptable. And if you fail, it must immediately be reversed, because you don't have the strength to stand failure. I want to repeat that message, because that is the message that our children hear. We won't let you fail because you don't have the strength to withstand failure. Imagine what Moshe was saying to Eliezer and Gershom. All of Israel can withstand slavery, but you, my children, cannot. They therefore grew up, if this idea is in fact true, feeling weaker than everyone else in Israel, because they were the only ones who couldn't stand to march through the sea to liberation. And we do this to our own children. We stand under them with a safety net as they climb the tree, because God forbid they should fall. As though all sorts of pains and difficulties and trials aren't part of being an adult. And where do you get trained to deal with failure? You're supposed to get trained early on. Kids are supposed to fail, because failure is an essential tool to succeeding in life. It's what Rabbi Yochanan says in the Talmud. He says, the eye has a light part and a dark part, but you can only see through the dark part. If you don't learn how to cope with darkness, life will crush you. Because your parents won't be there to pour sanitizing gel over you when your marriage is in trouble, or your kids are sick, or your job goes awry, or you fail in any of the thousand ways that human beings fail every single day. Every day. Because the universe conspires with you whenever you have a good idea. I opened up the Los Angeles Times this morning and looked at the editorial page, and there was an editorial that was titled, I don't remember exactly, and I couldn't cut it out, but it was titled something like, Germs Are Good. And it was all about the fact that people are being subject to more and more diseases because their immune systems are not being built up by contact with germs when they're kids. Because their parents are running after them, squirting them with Purell. Right? We have the most washed generation in history. Except apparently in hospitals. Where nobody seems to wash. Right? There's an article every day. Every single day there are two articles. One, people are getting infections in hospitals because hospital workers aren't washing. And two, kids are washing too much. So just, I'd like to keep those distinct. I failed all the time in school. All the time. God knows. My father, I remember, told me a story that gave me great confidence, considering the fact that he told me this long after, you know, I was older, and he was a rabbi, of course, for many years. He apparently was not the most accomplished student in Hebrew school growing up, to put it lightly. And he'll be here next week. You can verify this with him. I'm not making this up. And when he decided to go to rabbinical school, one of the first people he wanted to tell was his old teacher from Hebrew school. Right? Then it was called Hebrew school, now religious school. And so he ran back to his Hebrew school to tell the teacher, whose name escapes me, Mr. So-and-so, I just want you to know that I'm going to the Jewish Theological Seminary and I'm going to become a rabbi. He said there was silence for a moment. And then the teacher said in his Yiddish accent, he says, Vel volpe? The Jews have survived thousands of years. They'll survive this too. It's not bad to fail. Now I'd like to talk about why we don't let our children fail. It's not for them. It's for us. Because we can't bear the pain. And so we project on them, they can't stand it. But that's the only way that you build a resilient soul in this world. It's the only way. There is no other school but failure. You have experienced but half the world, says Emerson, if you have not entered the house of pain. You have to know pain. You have to know failure. Or you will be crushed by life and have no resources. And it is our job as parents to let our kids fail. And to let them have the pain of failure and not always take it away. Not to say, oh, that's not really failure, or you really did fine, or I'm sure everybody else in the class did badly too. It's not your job to be mean. and to be diminishing and to steal that elusive quality self-esteem. But it's also not our job to pretend that people don't do badly and don't have to sometimes do better. And that they can take slavery just like everybody else so that one day they will know Sinai. One kid in this article said, "I wish my parents had a hobby other than me." We are the hovering generation. But it is crucial to remember that we actually are not building our children for childhood. We're building them to be adults. And everybody who is an adult knows you can't get through this life if you can't cope with failure, with pain, with trial, with anguish, with disappointment, and with disappointing. Because we all disappoint people every day of our lives, and we have to live with it. And you don't live with it by pretending that you really didn't do it. You live with it by admitting your imperfections and by seeking to improve on them. Many years ago, I read a powerful quotation by Thomas Merton, a remarkable monk and writer who in Seven Story Mountain, his autobiography, wrote as follows. He says, "The truth many people never understand until it is too late is that the more you try to avoid suffering, the more you suffer. Because smaller and more insignificant things begin to torture you in proportion to your fear of being hurt." In other words, if you try to avoid everything that will cause you pain, think how many things in this world you have to spend all your time avoiding. And since you cannot avoid them all, you will constantly experience not only the natural pain of the things that happen, but also the failure of your avoidance. And you will be running around like a ping pong ball, trying to stay away from all the pitfalls in the machine. And it's a lousy way to live a life. It's a life with no resilience, with no courage, and with no faith. So if Moshe, in fact, sent his children to Midian because he did not want them to experience slavery, we can understand and we can sympathize, but we shouldn't imitate him. We should model failure for our children. We should tell them, "I did this wrong, I failed, it hurts, I'm going to do better next time." And let them know that failure can be overcome. George Eliot, the great writer, once wrote in one of her essays that childhood is soothed by no memories of outlived sorrow. When a child has a pain, they think it's going to go on forever. They don't know, as adults do, that time heals and pain passes and failure can be overcome. It is our job to teach them that. That it is not the catastrophe of your life that you got a C or a D or that you failed. In fact, it is an indispensable lesson of life. And the pain that it causes you, that pain is central to your soul because you will build on it. So that the next time you fail, you'll fail better. That was Samuel Beckett's motto. Fail, fail again, fail better. It's not a bad thing to live by. Since nobody achieves ultimate success, what we can achieve are some pretty wonderful failures and little successes along the way. And our principal success is to learn and to teach that, as the Talmud said, God gives us nothing that we cannot endure. not because it doesn't hurt, not because at times it isn't tragic or even devastating, but because without slavery, there is no Sinai. Moses didn't allow his children to see that slavery, and we are faced with less cataclysmic choices. But as parents, if we don't allow our children to feel pain, then they won't know what to do with the pain of life. And so Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, our teacher, is our teacher once again. Because great leaders don't only bequeath to us their achievements, they also bequeath to us their mistakes. From both, God willing, if we are wise enough, we too can learn, and we too can teach. Shabbat Shalom.